the bucket list. Those are good questions from gods that don't exist. Have you found joy in your life? Has your life brought joy to others? Good questions to think about. Live passionately. You know, some people's favorite day of the week is someday. Someday when I retire. Someday when the kids are a little bit older. Someday when I have a little more money in the bank. Someday I'll take time to relax. Someday I'll volunteer more. Someday I'll have time to devote to that hobby. Someday I hope to. Someday I'll quit smoking. Someday I'll get serious about my diet. Someday I'll focus on my marriage. Someday I'll spend time with my kids. Someday, someday, someday. What's it going to take to turn someday into today? And that's the question we're working with through this month. What's it going to take for us to change our lives around and live like we were dying? To realize that our time on earth is short. One of the things that we can do to help that is, you know, from that movie, The Bucket List, to create a bucket list, a list of things that we would like to do before we die, before we kick the bucket. That's why the series is called The Bucket List, to help us to try and reverse our thinking and to live backwards in such a way where we're living with the end in mind. Now, every week as we join together, there's a verse that I've selected out of a bunch of different verses that is going to be our brevity of life verse. Last week, we started off with a verse from Psalms. This week, it's a verse from Psalms. It's going to sound very similar, but there are actually two different verses that say very similar things. So let's take a look at that. Psalm 90:12. It says, "Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Teach us to number our days. Teach us to know that we only have a short time, that we only have a brief time where we can live. And in that time, the psalmist says that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So if we get this understanding down pat, it might help us to have a heart of wisdom. Now, a heart of wisdom is something that kind of throws me for a curve. I'm thinking, heart of wisdom, that just doesn't make sense. It sounds kind of like an oxymoron, all right, a contradictory statement. Things like, you know, why do we drive on a parkway and park on a driveway? Ever thought about that? Why do they call them apartments if they're so close together? Or maybe like jumbo shrimp. You ever thought about that? Just contradictory statements. That's kind of what I hear when I hear heart of wisdom. I always feel like wisdom is against my heart, against my passions, against the places where I want to go or things. When I start thinking logically about it, it seems like it holds me back. But when we look at this phrase and we understand that wisdom means discernment, he says if we get this attitude, this understanding that we've got 30 days to live or that life is short, start writing a bucket list. If we start incorporating that in our life, then that might give us a wise heart. Wisdom means to be able to discern. That seems to me to be a very good thing to have, to be able to have a heart that discerns, a heart that knows the difference between something that's a good passion or a bad passion, an important passion or an unimportant passion. For us to be able to sort things out. So today our prayer is going to be in honor of this verse in Psalms. And it's, Father, help me to accept the brevity of life so that I can develop a wise heart. That's our prayer today. Now there's a story in the Gospels that I'd like to share with you. And we're going to be walking through this. If you would go on and open your Bibles to Luke. It's Matthew, Mark, Luke. It's the third book in your New Testament. Luke chapter 5. Some pages turning there. And this story is about some passionate men. Some men that had a passion, something that was on their heart. We're going to kind of walk through this story and pick out some pieces that we can apply to our life. Verse 17 of chapter 5, it says, "One day as he was teaching, Pharisees and teachers of the law who had come from every village of Galilee and from Judea and Jerusalem were sitting there. And the power of the Lord was present for him to heal the sick. Some men came carrying a paralytic on a mat and tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus. When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they turned around and went home." Is that what it says? When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they just left him laying there, hoping Jesus would pass by. Now, when they had a passion, they had a desire, they had something they wanted to accomplish. So what they did was they went up on the roof and lowered him on his mat through the tiles in the middle of the crowd. Let's pause there and take a look at these passionate men. They did something drastic. They were passionate about helping their friend, and their passion drove them to drastic measures. If you want to live a life of passion, if you want to live passionately, then it's going to take some drastic changes. You are going to have to do something drastically. Because right now, a lot of us are living in the someday syndrome. We're living in the place where we're just existing and we're not living. Where we're just here and we're not actually having a life that's productive. Sir Isaac Newton's first law of motion states that any object that is in motion tends to stay in motion and in that same speed and same direction unless it is acted upon by a sum of physical forces. I believe that's true with our lives. When you get set in a certain motion, a certain direction, you're going through the motions. We even call it that. You wake up in the morning, you have the same thing for breakfast. You go to work, you do the same thing at work. You come home, you do the same thing, and you just get into this thing where you're just going through the motions. That's not living, that's existing. If that's where you are, the only way to break that is to do something drastic, to change that. The only way that you're going to change that direction, that speed, is for some outside force, something to come in and mess it up. Sometimes that's a phone call from the doctor. Sometimes that's bad test results. And your whole life changes. Your perspective changes. The goal of this series is to get that perspective without those calls from the doctor, without those test results. To change our perspective on things. And in order to do that, you have to do something drastic. As these men acted out of passion, they did a couple things that we're going to unpack. I'd like to share them with you, and you can write them down. The first thing they did was that they realized what was important. They had a friend who needed to be healed. Jesus could heal people. They needed to get Jesus to, or they needed to get their friend to Jesus. That's what was important. That day, nothing else mattered. They needed to get their friend to Jesus. Second thing they did is they removed the obstacles. There was a crowd there, so they bypassed the crowd. They couldn't get in through the door, so what'd they do? They went up on the roof. They tore the roof out. They removed the obstacles. Now let's unpack these things as we want to live a life of passion. First of all, we have to realize what's important. We have to separate things in our life that are important from the things in our life that are unimportant. I believe if we would actually look at our lives, a lot of us spend our time, a majority of our time, doing things that are unimportant. And when you're doing that, your life is miserable. And you're stuck there. You feel like you're stuck there. You got to do something drastic. You got to snap out of it. In order to do something passionate, you have to figure out what's important to your heart. We get into this wise heart understanding. What's important to you? When you're doing those things, those are the times in your life when you're living, when you feel like you're really alive, when you're doing the things you love, when you're doing the things that are important to you. Now, as we're sorting these things out and we're trying to gain a wise heart this morning, I'd like to share a quote with you from C.S. Lewis. And a good number of things that I'm sharing with you comes from this book, 1 Month to Live. Great book. I encourage you guys, if this series has been something that's kind of sparked an interest for you and you'd like to pursue it further, I encourage you to pick up this book, 1 Month to Live, by Carrie and Chris Shook. Good stuff. In this book, I found this quote and a few other quotes that I'll be sharing. I'll turn that around so you can see that. And the quote from C.S. Lewis that I found, it's a new C.S. Lewis quote for me. It says, "You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body." Oh, man, that's good. Most of the stuff I hear from C.S. Lewis is good, but that's good. Because I think what happens when we get into this someday syndrome, when we're just existing, and we're doing things that are unimportant, it's because we feel like we're a body that has a soul. And that's completely incorrect. We're living for the here and now. We're living for the temporal. We're doing things. We're involving our time in unimportant things that are going to disappear when this world disappears. So if you search out and you find your passions, and your heart will tell you this is true, when you find things that are important and you love doing those things, you're passionate about those things are typically going to be eternal things. And we need to sort our life according to that. You have the opportunity to make choices, to spend your time, to spend your resources, to spend your money, to spend your passions, to spend your life on things that will last forever. You are a soul. You happen to have a body. Live like a soul. Sort things as unimportant and important that way, using that rule. And that's when you'll find your true passion. The next thing these men did is they lifted their friend up to the roof. They removed the roof. They removed the obstacle. So this morning I want to ask you, in order to live passionately, what's your roof? What's standing in between you and the thing that you'd like to do passionately? What's standing in between you and what's important in your life? Whatever that is, rip it out. Pull it out. Because we're talking about doing things drastically. In order to make a change, you can't just adjust a few things. It has to be drastic. If you just adjust a few things and you look for results, it's not going to happen. Yank these things out of your life. What are some of the obstacles that we come across? Well, I think in general, a lot of us have the obstacle of no margin in our life. We're just, all our money is spent. It's all going somewhere. And when you get a raise, you find more stuff to spend your money on. Do something drastic. Get rid of a toy. Get rid of a few things. Downsize to a smaller house. See, that's crazy. No, that's drastic. And what you're doing is you're sorting important from unimportant, eternal from temporal. And when you do that and you free up some money, then you can invest it into things that are important to you, passions that God has given to you. Because right now, I believe a lot of us are spending our money on things that are unimportant, and they're going to disappear when this world goes. Or your time. Some of us, we have no margin in our time. We have no time to do the things that we're passionate about. And we live in that someday syndrome. Someday when I've got enough time, that's not going to happen. You have to do something drastic. You have to remove the obstacle. Remove that. Pull things out of your life that are temporal. I mean, I got to pull my kid out of soccer and basketball. Just pull him out of basketball. Everybody knows soccer is superior to basketball. Yank some things out of your life. Look at your life and say, you know what? I am jam-packed with stuff. Pull some things out so that you have time to do the things that you're passionate about and live with passion. Follow the example of these guys. I think some of us are chained by fears. You know, we know what's unimportant. We know what's important, but we're scared to do what's important. We're scared to step out. We think, you know, what will other people think of me? Will I still fit in? What if I'm not viewed as successful if I choose a smaller house in order to do something I'm passionate about? Or a clunker for a car? What will people think? What will my image look like if I make these choices? And the big one is, or the two big ones, what if I risk and it doesn't work out? And to me, the biggest one, what if I fail? We fear failure. Share a quote with you from Thomas Edison. He said, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that don't work." I think that's an attitude of someone that's thinking positively. Someone that's looking, and you look at what he did. He was successful. Now, if he had 10,000 ways that didn't work, he found one that did, and it works. And we enjoy it. We can read our notes very well. We can look down at our Bibles. We don't need skylights to do that this morning. Look at your life. Look at what's passionate. Separate what's important from what's unimportant. And remove the obstacles. Get rid of the fear. Get rid of the fear. God says in Isaiah 41, he says, I took you from the ends of the earth. From its farthest corners I called you. I said, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you. So do not what? Do not fear. God's saying, I'm in control, bud. Don't fear. I'm with you. Do not be dismayed. Don't be discouraged. He said, I am your God. He's a personal God. I will strengthen you and help you. If you think that's just Old Testament God speaking, you can flip over to 2 Timothy 4:17. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, a spirit of fear. He gave us a spirit of what? Of power, of love, and self-discipline. That's what you have. That's just two verses. Do you know that there are 364 other times in the Bible when God says, do not fear? Seems to be something that God likes to share with us. He wants to encourage us, and he wants us to pick up on that. Don't be afraid. Don't let that be an obstacle. Do not fear. 366 times, including the two that we just had, enough for one day, one a day for a year on a leap year. Don't fear. The next thing that we see in this story is a placement where these passionate men take their friend. It's just very short. We actually cut off a verse here. I'll read us into it in verse 19. When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they went up on the roof, lowered him on his mat through the tiles in the middle of the crowd. Where? Right in front of Jesus. Pause on that. Look at your life. When you're trying to gain a wise heart, a heart that discerns your passions so that you can find out what you're really passionate about, so that you can really live, you need to do all you can. You need to do what it takes to get close to Jesus. I'll tell you why, because he will help you find your passions. You know, a lot of times we hear things like this and we think about spiritual growth and we think, you know, you're right. I need to grow spiritually. I need to grow up spiritually. I need to mature. I've heard that word I don't know how many times recently. We need maturity or we need mature this or Christians need to mature and da da da. You know what? And this was something that Carrie shared with me, or Carrie or Chris, I don't know. That's awful. That's tough when you've got a husband and wife. One of them's Carrie and the other one's Chris. You know, I don't know which one's which there. But one of them shared with me in that book, and I thought this was pretty amazing, that it's not spiritual growth that we need. It's spiritual health. Healthy things grow. We focus on spiritual growth, I think, way too much. I think we miss it. That gets us into that syndrome over there of things that are unimportant. I'm not saying that spiritual growth is unimportant, but when that's all you're striving for, you're really missing it. Spiritual health comes from having a relationship with Jesus Christ, where you are connected with your Creator. He knows you. He loves you. Jesus came so that you could have a relationship with God. Connect with Him. Spend time with Him. That's what spiritual health is. And if you're healthy, you're going to grow. Get as close as you can to Jesus, and you will grow more than you've ever imagined that you could grow. Jesus came down to earth so that we could have a relationship with the Father. And among that, one of his key reasons for coming, he shares with us. He shares with us in John 10:10, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Jesus says, the enemy, Satan, he's a dream killer. He's a passion squasher. He doesn't want you to live life with passion. I think Satan delights in the times when we live for the temporal. We waste our time, we waste our money on things that don't matter. Jesus came so that you could have life, so that you could have passion, and you could live life to the full. That's why Jesus came, so we could have life. And the closer you get to him, the more you're going to understand your passion, the more you're going to have a clear heart. You're going to have clarity of heart so that you can have a wise heart, so you can have a heart of wisdom to discern your passions and what God has made you for. And in fact, You might discover passions that you would have never, ever dreamed of having before. I want you to take a look at what happens here. They drop him down in front of Jesus. When Jesus saw their faith, verse 20, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." Now, I don't think you have to be a theologian or a Bible college graduate to look at this and say, you know, I don't think that was what they were going for. They brought their paralytic friend. They went through all this trouble to get a healing. That was their goal. That's what they wanted. That was their passion. Our passion is for our friend to get a healing. Now, I want you to take a look at this. God trumped their passion with a bigger passion. Forgiveness of sins is so much better than being healed. They would not have known that. They weren't thinking that way until they got close to Jesus. And Jesus said, "Let me God-size your passion. You need to get close to Jesus because Jesus will God-size your passions." It's like when you go through a drive-through, a fast food restaurant. They say, "You want to biggie size that? You want to supersize that?" Now, every time you hear that statement, I want you to refer back to this and think, and hear God asking you, and he's asking you this morning as you are sitting in your pew, do you want to God-size your passions? Do you want to make them God-sized? I mean really, the only way you're going to do that is to get close to Jesus. Have spiritual health. Get to know Jesus. And God will God-size your passions. If your passions are your size, then you're probably not hanging out with Jesus the way you need to hang out with Jesus. Because he will God-size your passions. In Psalm 37:4, it's a verse that I believe a lot of us have read before. It says, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." I've always thought this verse was interesting. And as I was looking at it from this viewpoint, I thought, you know, if you delight yourself in the Lord, oftentimes we look at this verse and we say, if you delight in the Lord, and we use it as a health and wealth gospel, if you've ever heard that term. If you delight yourself in the Lord, you'll get big cars and big houses, and you'll have just a life full of luxury. And delight in yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you everything that you want. I want us to pause for a minute and take a look at this, because I think we've been reading it wrong. What if this says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart? Now, you just read it the same way. It's the desires of your heart that he gives. Are you following me? It's your passions that he gives to you. When you get close to Jesus and you start delighting yourself in the Lord, he's going to put passions in your heart. He's going to put desires in your heart that are supersized. They're bigger than any passions or desires that you would have ever had. And they're coming from God, so they're going to be good. They're going to be eternal. They're going to be productive. That's what he's giving you when you delight yourself in the Lord. It doesn't say he's just going to give you everything you want. I believe this verse has a little bit of a twist to it. And we see that. God size your passions. God will give you the desires of your heart. And we looked at the parable of the talents a few weeks ago. The parable of the talents where the one guy gets 5 talents, which is a sum of money. And when his master comes back, he's got 10 because he's doubled it. And one gets 2 and he's doubled it to 4. And another guy gets 1 and he buries it. And the master's angry with him. Now, that's talking about money. That a talent is a form of money. Now, what if we took the premise of that and we applied it to passion? Living your life passionately. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you passion. He will give you desires inside of your heart. If God is giving you desires inside your heart, he wants you to do something with it. If we take those passions that God has laid on our heart and we bury them, we're like that servant who buried his 1 talent. That's not God honoring. But think about how much you can honor God with the passions that he's laid on your heart. If you do something drastic and you remove the obstacles, you decide what's important. You get close to Jesus and you watch God size your passions. Take a look at what God did. Verse 25 or 24. When Jesus said to the man, to the paralyzed man, he said, "I tell you, get up, take your mat and go home." Immediately, he stood up in front of them, took what he had been lying on, and went home praising God. Everyone was amazed and gave praise to God. Actually, we'll pause here. I'm getting ahead of myself. Jesus tells him to take a memory with him. He says, take your mat and go home. And we're told the man took his mat and he went home. So when these things happen, when you follow through this process, when you've realized what's important, when you've removed the obstacles, when you've gotten close to Jesus, you've had your passions God-sized, and you've seen productivity come from it, you've seen life come from it, you've got those times in your life when you've been living, take a memory from that. Take a memory home. Keep a memory of what God has done. Some people prayer journal. Some people just keep a diary or a journal. If you're a guy, it's a journal. If you're a girl, it's a diary. In the Old Testament, they used to build altars or standing stones to remember special times where God had worked. In fact, there were other places. There were places that were specifically places to be remembered because this is where God did this. Either a well or a place where things... Can you imagine walking through that area with one of the disciples after Jesus had been there? Through Galilee and through Jerusalem, walking through there and saying, you know what? Here's where Jesus did this healing, or here's where this is the exact place where Jesus walked on the water. This is where we were when the storm came and Jesus calmed it. We need those in our life. Because a day will come when you start living back in the rut of life, the rut that your life is in right now. And you're going to need to keep a memory of that to kick you back out and get you back into living passionately. Keep maybe a momentum, something that some sort of physical object that reminds you of that passion that God gave you at that time and you went out and you did something about it. We need this. We need this badly because we need to remember God is active. And what happens when we get close to Him? You know, a series is called The Bucket List, and we're talking about 30 days to or 1 month to live. You know, the idea that you're going to die. We talked about the death clock last week, and it feels like it's just death, death, death. This series is not about dying. This series is all about living. Author Alan Sachs once said, everybody dies, but not everybody lives. Howard Hendricks is quoted saying, I've never met anyone who planned on having a mediocre life, but I've met many mediocre people. I tell you what, Jesus was the farthest thing from mediocre that you will ever meet. He lived with passion. Jesus lived. He didn't just die. He lived. We sing, He lives. He lives today. When He was here, He gave us an example of what living was about. Jesus had it together. He had a heart of wisdom. He knew what He wanted to accomplish. He knew what His passions were. He knew what was important. He knew how to properly prioritize His time. He knew what His purpose was. He knew what His drive was for. Not because He had a mind full of wisdom, but because He had a heart of wisdom. He had a wise heart. He could discern His passions, and He knew what He was passionate about. And He set out for it. Jesus was the most passionate person that you will ever come in contact with. And He created us to be passionate people. He created us to live. We need to follow in His example. God wants you to stop just existing and to start living. To stop spending your life on things that are unimportant and start living for things that are important. Stop living for things that are temporal and live for things that are eternal. That's where you're going to find passion. Nothing great ever happened without passion. Passion is a driving force behind all great art, all great music, all great literature, all great drama, all great architecture. The root is passion. Passion drives athletes to break records. Passion drives scientists to cure diseases. Passion is what gives life life. The kind of life you were made for. William Shedd said, "A ship is safe in harbor, but that's not what ships are for." You might feel safe here. That's not what you were made for. You were made to live. You were made to have passions, to live passionately. Get out of the harbor and get out on the dangerous seas. Risk a little. Do something drastic this morning. Live with passion. At the end of our story, verse 26, the verse that I almost read a minute ago, says, "Everyone was amazed and gave praise to God. They were filled with awe and said, 'We have seen remarkable things today.'" When God works amazing things in your life through your passion and you're really living, you will see remarkable things in your life. Other people will see remarkable things in your life, and God will get the glory. Find your passion, your wise heart, and you will see God do remarkable things in your life.